Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
To this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's Game with Words. What valuable life lesson will we reveal on today's show?
I think it's that people are no darn good.
That's it.
Yeah. I'll go with that. People are no darn good. That's exactly right.
What author will be quoted today? What reference accessed? What familiar thought and phrase intoned?
If you're happy and you know it, dry your hands.
Right.
Let's move on, shall we?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And what do you say we get out of the restroom? What do you say? Good move here?
Sure, the questions will be hard, but don't worry. If we don't know the answers, the best audience in public radio will.
Let me ask the audience, then. Evidently, you seem accustomed to cheap liquor.
Says You and all that entails after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. GOP presidential hopeful Mitt Romney struck a sharp tone in his first post-convention outing this weekend, telling supporters in Cincinnati,
"Look, if there's a coach whose record is 0 and $23 million, to get rid of him and get someone new."
Aides to Romney say he'll keep a low profile during the Democratic convention and use the time to prepare for presidential debates. Preparations are underway for the Democratic convention, which gavels to order in Charlotte, North Carolina on Tuesday. Obama re-election deputy campaign manager Stephanie Cutter is giving this convention forecast to reporters.
"It won't be about rallying the base or leveling petty attacks. It will be about what we need to do as a country to move us forward, not back."
President Obama campaigns in Colorado today, one of several swing states on the way to Charlotte. NPR's Scott Horsley has more.
This Labor Day weekend tour is a kind of warm-up for the Democratic convention and an effort to throw cold water on the GOP convention that just wrapped up. At a campaign stop in Iowa yesterday, Mr. Obama complained that while Republicans had plenty to say about his shortcomings, they offered few specifics about their own plans for the future.
"When Governor Romney had his chance to let you in on his secret sauce, he didn't offer you a single new idea. It was just a retread of the same old policies that have been sticking it to the middle class for years."
Mr. Obama says he'll be talking more about his own plans on Thursday, adding that voters will get to decide which path they prefer. Scott Horsley, NPR News, traveling with the president.
In today's Observer newspaper, Nobel Peace Laureate Archbishop Desmond Tutu calls for former President George W. Bush and former British leader Tony Blair to be tried for war crimes. As Larry Miller reports, Tutu has been an outspoken critic of the war in Iraq.
Archbishop Tutu says President Bush and Blair fabricated the grounds for war to behave like playground bullies and to drive countries farther apart. He blames them for creating the conditions that led to the Syrian civil war and a possible war with Iran. Tutu claims there are double standards for prosecuting leaders for war crimes, with those from Western countries never being made to answer for their actions. In a statement, Blair denies he and Mr. Bush lied to justify the war. Last week, the Archbishop pulled out of a South African conference on leadership because Blair was attending and being paid nearly $250,000. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
U.S. officials say they'll stop training Afghan local police for at least a month after a string of incidents where Afghan security force members turned on NATO troops. This is NPR News. In the wake of Hurricane Isaac, more than 200,000 Gulf Coast residents are still without power. New Orleans does appear to be back in business. Oil rig workers are heading back to the Gulf. Parts of coastal Plaquemines Parish are still underwater, though, with thousands still unable to go home there. Songwriter Hal David, known best as Burt Bacharach's partner in Rhyme, died Saturday in Los Angeles. NPR's Lauren Hodges reports.
Raindrops are falling on my head.
David's signature songwriting was simple and to the point, but still emotionally gratifying.
a combination that struck a lasting chord with music fans around the world. With his musical partner, Burt Bacharach, he composed several top 40 hits by artists like the Beatles, Frank Sinatra, and their longtime partner, Dionne Warwick. Born in New York City, David studied journalism at New York University and served in World War II before returning home to Manhattan, where he met Bacharach. In May, the songwriting pair received the Library of Congress Gershwin Prize for Popular Song during a White House tribute concert. President Barack Obama applauded their work, saying, quote, "They captured the emotions of our daily lives, the good times, the bad times, and everything in between." Hal David was 91. Lauren Hodges, NPR News. In Fort Pierce, Florida, five of the more than 20 pilot whales who swam onto a beach survived. State and national officials and nearby residents try to save all of them. The whales that didn't make it either had to be euthanized or they died of natural causes. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for 40 years working to improve health and health care, on the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in San Francisco comes from the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco. Our home away from home on the Bay and on the web at intercontinentalsanfrancisco.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scher.
Thank you. Thank you. From the Ken Barr Theater at the Friends Center for the Arts in San Francisco, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. She left to go shopping at 6:30 this morning, and this is the first I'm seeing, Miss Francine Akbar. Hey. He spent the last 2 weeks in Monterey, and in his own words, he's been reduced to flesh and cartilage. Tony Khan. And he plans to take the next week to explore California, because that's how long it takes him to drive to Vegas, Mr. Barry Nolan. And who captains this week?
Francine.
Francine, and the stores didn't open till 10. I was lost for a long time.
To my left, team two. She spent 3 hours this afternoon on a citywide ice cream crawl, the slightly greenish Carolyn Faye Fox. She spent 3 hours in the Museum of Art this afternoon. And that was just a gift shop. Paula Lyons. And he's grateful for any time he gets to spend in this great city, with the possible exception of 3 hours this afternoon, Mr. Arnie Reisman. And who leads tonight?
Arnie.
I'll try, yeah.
Arnold.
And let me tell you, that gift shop was worth it. It was a good one.
Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Last year, I stumbled upon Tom Parker's manual titled Rules of Thumb. And from those pages, a few guidelines to help you through life. Please answer the following questions with some rules of thumb. Carolyn, what possibly surprising rule of thumb applies to the express line in the supermarket?
Oh, the line you choose will inevitably move the slowest.
Well, that's true, but that's something else. That's Murphy's Law.
All right.
That's Murphy's Law.
That applies to the express line?
Yeah.
It applies to the express line.
Oh, well, it must be that people will have more items in their basket than they're supposed to.
Yeah. Well, it has a lot to do with that. Now, what rule of thumb is there?
The rule of thumb is that people can't count once they get into the express line.
Yeah.
I think it's that people are no darn good.
No.
That's it.
I'll go with that. People are no darn good. That's exactly right. It has everything to do with the 12 items or less.
Yeah, no one ever has 12
And it's
items.
A rule of thumb. So what is it?
It should be 12 items or fewer.
Fewer, for one. Whether, yeah, first of all.
Ooh, what a great says you.
That's what the whole point is.
Okay, how about 38 cans of cat food is not one item?
Oh, yes, it is. That's the 10 points.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the
gosh.
Rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Very good. If you have multiples of the same item, they are counted as one item.
Really?
So the
that's the rule of thumb.
True. That is the rule of thumb, though. If you have multiples of the same item, they are counted as one. So remember that the next time you go to the supermarket.
Right.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Right.
Try this one, Tony. How do you know when the ladder is leaning at the correct angle?
When the person who's on top of it remains there.
That's a dead giveaway right there.
When the shadow that it casts...
is on the house.
On the hypotenuse.
Is exactly at 1 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time, while you are getting as far away from it as possible. I have no idea. Does it have anything to do with an angle?
When you're standing erect and holding your hands out, if you can touch the ladder with the with your fingertips, it's at the right angle.
He's so close that you're going to get a lot of points for that.
If you stand and you stretch your feet out.
Yeah.
Well,
and the ski tip reaches the inside
of
your palm.
Yeah. But you know what? Just for knowing that, I'm going to give
Barry.
You the 10 points.
Thanks, Barry.
Very good. According to the National Fire Protection Agency, you place your toes against the bottom of the ladder and extend your arms. If only your fingertips can touch the rungs, the pitch is too shallow. If your palms can touch, too steep. But if you can grasp the rungs with arms comfortably extended, it's perfect.
You made training films for them, didn't you?
I did not.
They're based in Boston, and Richard has made training films for them.
I don't remember.
You did. I know you did.
All right. Well, here's another rule of thumb. You'll like this, Arne.
Oh, good.
According to mathematician Gerald Gutlip.
Gerald Gutlip. All right.
Restroom hand dryers can tell you something you absolutely need to know about your life. Tell you what? Restroom hand dryers.
Not if you need to use nozzle. Them going in.
Yeah. That right. The nozzle is for your palms.
No.
Not your nose.
If you're happy and you know it, dry your hands.
Right.
That's closer than you know.
It can tell you something about
your
life.
Absolutely.
Always carry paper towels with you. Because the hand dryer doesn't do a damn thing.
You know, that's true, and I'm going to give you some points.
It doesn't last long enough for you to dry your hands. The thing, you push the button, it's like vacuuming your car. You just keep throwing in the quarters, right? And you get six nurdles off the carpet, and then...
how does that make you feel?
Worthless. I've been taken advantage of.
Yeah. Anybody want to take a shot?
What has this got to do with hand dryers?
Hand dryers don't typically go long enough for you to fully dry your hands in one button push.
That's right.
If you don't push the button a second time, you settle for too little.
You know, he's very close. He's very close. But if you're too busy to use the hot air hand dryers, your life is way too hectic for your health.
If you're too busy to use it?
Your life is way too hectic for your health. So that's the rule of thumb.
Okay.
Francine, try this. If you want to know, here's another rule of thumb. If you want to know the real reason you were fired from your last job, what should you do?
Yeah. Well, you could have a nice, meaningful chat with the HR person.
Mm-hmm.
You could drink more.
But if you want to know the real reason...
Ask the person who replaces you.
Well, it has a lot to do with the person who replaces you.
Look at what
they are. Subtract your age
by 35.
I think you want to listen to Barry on this one.
What?
Look at what the person that replaces you is that you aren't.
Yeah.
What do you think, audience? What should you do? Look at the job posting for your old job.
Oh.
And find the expectations and requirements and look for new additions.
Oh.
Because
oh.
That's what they were looking for that you didn't have.
Okay. All right.
Try this one, Paula. Here's a true rule of thumb. What's the best way to test how well a steak is done by touch?
Oh, I think you just press it, and if it pops back up, it's, what's, no, that's a cake. Wait a minute. Will you press it? And you can tell I don't cook. Carolyn.
Yeah, you press it, and you, the degree of resistance it offers indicates to you the level of doneness.
That's exactly right, but you need a reference of some variety. What's the reference?
The palm of your hand.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. She's exactly right. It's not the palm so much.
Well, it's the fleshy part.
Not really. It says a medium rare steak should be as soft and puffy to the touch as the area between your thumb and first finger.
Really?
Right in there. That's how it should be.
Rare.
The
yeah.
rarer you want it, the softer it should be, and well done, firmer. But it's that area between your thumb and first finger. And finally, Barry, what rule of thumb might be subtitled The Law of Inverse Inebriation?
Think yourself the sober. More you think you're sober,
yeah.
the drunker you are.
That's a good one, and that would go, but...
The drunker you are, the smarter you get.
Yes.
No,
sometimes happens on this show.
Yeah, that's not true.
The when drunker you are, the better you look.
10 points. Exactly. This actually has to do with the liquor. You want to the liquor itself. You want to try it?
When you say the other guy will drive and you're alone.
Maybe it's about proof.
The law of reverse inebriation.
No, inverse.
Inverse
inebriation. It has to do with the liquor.
Is it alcohol proof?
As you get more drunk, you should just buy swill.
Yeah. It's very close. It's actually the cheaper the liquor, the worse the hangover.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
What, no? Well, let me ask the audience then. Evidently, you seem accustomed to cheap liquor.
That's the secret to a good house.
I don't know. Is that not true? The cheaper the liquor, the worse the hangover? Well... Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Hot Frittatas. It's the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one will have the actual definition. The others will have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Francine. If she can sniff out the truth, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word dupion. D-U-P-I.
Dupion.
Okay. Just for the radio audience, that's D-U-P-I-O-N. Dupion. Gentlemen. Begins in Nashville, rolls through Hartford and Milwaukee, careens through Syracuse, and finally comes to rest in Boston. It's our fall caravan of cajolery, live performances of Says You. It begins the first weekend in September in Nashville, Tennessee. In October, there are stops in Hartford, Connecticut, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
In November, we're on the campus of Syracuse University for some salty language, a Says You salute to the Salt City. Then in Boston, the weekend of December 29th, we close the year with the performance we call In the Great Mayan Bay. As we figure if the world's going to end, we're going out laughing. Tickets, information, and details are available at sayu.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you simply follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. Says You returns after this from home. Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U.
That is the Hot Frittatas. And that's Gus Gorelick on the mandolin, Don Coffin on the guitar, and Dennis Hadley on the accordion. Let me take a moment and thank our scorekeepers again this week. That's A.J. Giralis and Miss Bella McDaniel. Thank you very much for keeping the score. We've had a few moments with the word dupion. And for those of you who didn't hear the spelling, it's D-U-P-I-O-N. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Dupion, it's a potty chair. No, a dupion, it's close. It's a loincloth. Or a similar wrapped item of clothing.
A loincloth.
Yes.
A loincloth. What else is similar to a loincloth?
A sirloin cloth.
Yeah. I guess.
A diaper.
A loincloth. This dupion is a loincloth. Could be that. Or it could be something else. Arnold?
Oh, yes, it could be something else. Yeah, I guess it has something to do with, must have come from some kind of chariot kind of thing, because it's on a children's carousel. Mm. It's the little cart-like device where you can put in more than one child and have it drawn by two ponies, except it's not real. It's part of a carousel. It doesn't go anywhere. It just sits on the carousel.
Those are always
drawn
such
by
a
two of the horses.
such a disappointment. When the ponies were all taken, you had to sit in the cart.
Right. What?
In the Dupion.
In the Dupion.
What?
And that often happened there.
Just curious, what's the cart say?
It's the chariot. The chariot-like it's device that the kids sit on, the carousel. A chariot.
A carousel chariot drawn by two ponies.
Drawn by two ponies. That could be it. Or Paula? Yet a third alternative.
I don't know. I think a Dupion is a little bit closer to some sort of a duplex because it's actually one of those last stages of an insect there where the cocoon is made by two worms working together, two silkworms working together. It's like a cocoon cooperative.
Two silkworms work together and make a Dupion.
Right.
Two silkworms walk into a bar.
Well, because we all saw Lady Gaga come out of one.
Yes,
remember?
Right.
That's right. That's true. You see two silkworms working together on a cocoon, you go, that's a Dupion.
That
could be it. Could be that chariot drawn by two horses on the carousel or the lawn cloth.
It's one of those. Lawn cloth? Did you say?
What?
Did you say lawn cloth?
Not lawn.
I said loincloth.
Okay.
But I coughed in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Or the loincloth.
Or the loin cough. Yes.
Believe
heard
it or not,
many
it's,
a tailor.
It's yeah. one of those three, and the choice, Francine, is yours.
Well, isn't this fun?
Well, so far.
Isn't it fun?
One thing that came to mind, but it seems irrelevant, is the Duchevaux. Does anyone remember that old car?
Yeah.
Tony and I were just thinking about this idea of the carousel with something other than the horses. And
but it's two horses drawing the carousel.
The cart.
Yeah.
So I'm not buying the loincloth.
Why would you need another name for a loincloth? Like you're trying to disguise it as something else? Is that a loincloth? No, it's a Dupion, actually. I just don't... How can two silkworms grow together? Silkworms are so managed by other people. There's people always watching what a silkworm is doing.
Okay, let's cut to the chase. Shall we go with the carousel?
Yep.
Okay.
Arnie, they have come to the unanimous conclusion that the Dupion is the chariot on the carousel. Is that, in fact, what it is?
It's French for please fake a definition.
Oh. As you did. All right, audience.
Perhaps some duplicité.
Yeah. All right, audience, what do you think? How many say the
loin... The loincloth.
Wait, yes. How many say the loincloth? How many say the two silkworms working together? Whoa.
Well, I'm glad it's so clear cut.
That's pretty close. I really couldn't tell. So someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
I wasn't.
Not me.
Silkworms. Oh.
Dupion, a cocoon made by two silkworms working together.
That's
what it is.
That's communism.
For Arnie's team.
Communism.
Let's go. Ooh, they got them mumbling out there now, boy.
Yeah, right.
Half that audience was pretty surprised.
Okay. Well, it's always very gratifying to me when they don't know either.
That's right.
Kind of rare, too, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's go on to round three. We are completely sure that you'll be sure of the definitions of the following words. So sure, in fact, that we rejected them as bluffing possibilities. Were we right to be so sure? Surely you can clear that up by defining the following obvious entries. Carolyn?
Yes?
What might be meant by knick-knackatory?
Knick-knackatory.
Knick-knackatory. Knick-knackatory.
It's
not a brick-a-brackatorium.
In the laboratory.
We rejected these as bluffing possibilities.
Brick-a-brackatorium?
Is it a tchotchke shelf?
Yeah.
It is
brick-a-brackatory.
Brick-a-brackatorium.
Right,
give the dog a bone. Yeah, that's right.
There's so many stations.
You should have used this as a bluffing word.
I should have. No, because you would get this. I really think you would get this.
Nick Nakatori.
Nick Nakatori.
It's not a miscellany shop?
Well, you know what? Pretty close. You're
okay.
8 points there.
A tourist shop or something.
A gift shop, a thrift shop.
Like an old curiosity shop.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's actually, anybody want to guess in the audience? No, it is a toy store.
A toy store.
So you were, what do you think, 8 points,
yeah,
nine
sure.
points?
Nakatori.
9 points. Give him 9 points for that.
It's a toy shop.
Yeah, I thought the minute they hear a toy shop, what else could it be?
Yeah.
So Nick Nakatori didn't make the cut. Try this one, Tony. Rectalgia.
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 Oh, you don't want to use this word.
Certain things. It's a condition that comes from sitting down too hard on certain things.
Yes, it's probably.
It is an unfortunate reverse osmosis with a toilet.
You know, before this gets out of hand, give him the 10 points and be done with it. Yeah, can you say this anyway gracefully?
No, we were waiting for you to gracefully.
You know, I went about as far as I thought I could.
Yeah, that's... It is, in fact...
Regretting things that have passed.
No, it's... Take 3 points away.
Even better.
It is, in fact, other side.
Is this when your bum falls asleep?
No, it's actually, audience, a pain in the behind
in the
is
behind.
Exactly
okay.
what it is. A rectalgia is a pain in the behind.
Ah.
Try this one, Arnie.
Yeah.
Mahout. M-A-H-O-U-T. Mahout.
Isn't that an elephant trainer? Oh,
yeah. That is exactly what it is, and we really did think you'd know that.
Yeah.
So we rejected that one also.
And where'd you hear
10
that?
Ten points.
I forgot to give you the bell. Very good.
10 points.
Try this one, Francine. Word that didn't make the cut. Rechefe.
Who?
R E.
Doesn't she have a cooking show? Oh, what?
R-E-C-H-A-U-F-F-E, Rechefe.
Reheated.
And which would indicate?
Leftovers.
There you go,
leftovers.
Exactly, we knew you'd know that. Try this one, Paula. Lycanthropy.
Oh. Werewolvery.
Yeah. Could I get a word in here? I didn't even hear his word.
Oh, okay. Lycanthropy. L-Y-C-A-N-T-H-R-O-P-Y. Lycanthropy.
No, you want me to say it again?
I think it's werewolfery.
It's the illusion that one is It's the illusion that one is a werewolf.
It's a sudden urge for a shave.
Is it a mental illness if you really are a werewolf?
I'm not paranoid. They really are after me.
Yeah, right.
And finally, Barry, I just thought that the minute you heard this definition, there was no faking. I don't know if you'll get it. Give it a shot. The word is troat. T-R-O-A-T. Troat.
It's when you got a pain right there.
Pain in the throat.
Right.
The result of a bad Heimlich maneuver, right? Yeah. T-R-O-A-T?
Troat.
It's a wooden fish.
He's getting points for that. I don't care. You're getting points for that. No, it's nothing like a wooden fish. Troat.
It's a younger kind of animal.
Well, it has to do with animals, but it's...
Things that animals leave behind.
you mean like
your cell phone?
Yeah, keys.
Yeah.
Reading glasses.
Yeah, you're reading glasses. The heck with it. 10 points. It's done. You're done here.
It is late.
What is it?
I just thought that the minute you heard the definition, you'd go for it. Trote means to cry out like a running buck.
Oh. We all know that sound, don't we?
Should we give it a try, Richard?
That was my next guess.
That was your next guess. I understand that. Well, just to let you know that it is a difficult process, those are some of the words that were left behind in the fray.
Oh, my
just
God.
As well.
And
just
behind
as well.
Is the operative word here.
Yeah. Let's go on to round four.
Let's.
Which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points. Arnie, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word home gang. H-O-L-M-G-A-N-G. Home gang. Gentlemen? Just a quick reminder, Says You stops in Hartford, Connecticut, Friday, October 12th, for one night only at the University of Hartford. And November 16th and 17th, we return to Syracuse, New York, for a little upstate wordplay. Add that to our September shows in Nashville, Tennessee, our October foray to Milwaukee, and our end-of-the-year special in Boston, and you have this year's fall schedule for Says You. Information's available at SaysYou.net, and we hope to see you this fall at a live performance of Says You. Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back. Stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. That is the Hot Frittatas. Thanks, guys, for a great night. We've had a few moments with the word home gang. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Well, you'd think it would be where a homie goes, right. You know. But it's not. It's another version for what we would otherwise call a snafu, like a good idea gone really bad, like the Edsel, you know, which was compared to an Oldsmobile sucking a lemon, yeah. You know, or Godfather 3, you know. that's a home gang, a total snafu.
A total snafu, something gone really bad, wrote it off the rails, you got a home gang on your hands. Well, that's possible. Could be that, or it could be something else. Francine?
Well, looking at the spelling, H-O-L-M, gang, I thought it must be a street fighter in the Netherlands. But I thought further. And I came to the thought that it is actually a duel that takes place between two people on an island.
A duel?
It could be an island in the Netherlands, but...
Which island?
A duel on an island.
A duel.
Does it have to take place on an island? The duel takes place...
An island.
Okay.
It usually begins with one person saying to the other, you know, I see just a little bit too much of you.
That's right. This rock ain't big enough for the both of us. A duel fought on an island is a home gang.
Home gang.
Could be that, or Barry, something else.
Home gang is the cry of a rutting buck. No, I made that up.
With rectalgia?
Yes. Home gang is a form of restless depression stemming from boredom. I think every high school male in the world has uttered, there is so nothing going on, let's go home gang.
It is that restless depression brought on by boredom. Just drives you nuts. It's home gang. That's what it could be. It could be that, a duel fought on an island, or a total snafu. It's one of those three, and the choice, Arnold, is yours.
It's one of those times, again, when you hear the first one, you go, nah. By the time you hear the other two, you go back to the other. Well, I don't think it's Dutch. It looks like Swedish violence to me, but... What do you think? Snafu is beginning to look better to me. I don't know.
No, even Francine's definition is looking good.
A duel on an island?
A duel on an island.
Why would there be a special name for a duel on an island?
Why would there be a special name for anything?
That's true. You know? Right. Is this a home game? No, I don't think so, because there's a little, you know, piece of boardwalk that stretches over there, so this can't be a home game.
Right.
But do you like the restlessness born of boredom?
No.
I don't. I'm not voting for that one.
No. Okay, well, I'm glad
to
hear
that. Not that
one. So do you think it's a... Do you think it's a duel on an island or a snoring Tony?
You know... If we do the psychological analysis...
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Who's
did
winning?
You note the way that Francine said, oh, no, no.
Like, she's just throwing that in to make it sound more absurd, which means it could possibly be true because Richard is weird.
How did I get
into
this?
So that's one way of thinking. The other way of thinking is that it could be a total snafu.
We've got a 50-50 chance.
And you?
50-50, just like you.
Oh, parse it out.
Parse it out. Well,
yes.
I think it could
You've
be.
You've eliminated Barry.
I've eliminated Barry, yeah.
Yeah.
Duel on an island.
Okay.
I don't
okay,
know.
You guys,
it's absurd,
you guys like
but
the
it
duel on the
right.
island. We're going to go with Francine because...
She's going to have a good laugh if it's not true, right?
All right.
Well, Francine, they're going to go with you that a home gang is a duel fought on an island. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Home gang, curiously enough, a duel fought on
the island.
Wow!
That is exactly
what the devil is
what
that?
It is.
10 points.
You must
a
have
duel.
Seen my eyelids fluttering.
No, Paula called it a duel fought on an island.
A duel fought on an island. Well, it's, you know...
Where do you get these dictionaries?
Yeah.
In Amsterdam.
Yes.
Nor like Rotterdam.
Yeah. May I remind you that you had a cocoon made by two silkworms working together. I don't know.
This week's suggestion for a spotlight round comes at the request of Nora Handley of Washington, D.C. Nora writes, "Some years ago I met your guest panelist, Murray Horowitz, at a reception, and he told me he was on this great radio program that asked all kinds of word questions. He said the week before he'd been asked the difference between hail and hearty. At that point, he was whisk away, and I never did get his answer. Could you find that round and play it again?" We can and will, Nora. From Season 7, Murray, Sam Weissman, and Lenore Shannon joined us that day for a round of What's the Difference? Help comes from Steve Kay of Solon, Ohio, and two more contributors from our audience today, Ron and Deborah Caffo, and Jada Sherman. Where's Jada Sherman? Come up here, please. Take a seat close by just so we know where to look. Carolyn,
yes.
What's the difference between aid and abet?
What is the difference between aid and abet? You can provide first aid, but if you abet, somebody has to do something first.
You know, I hate to say this, but that's actually fairly close.
Yes. Yeah. You aid, you know, but abet is secondary to aiding.
No.
All right. Aid is to help someone do something directly. Abet is to sort of help, but at somewhat of a removed distance.
You know, I'm going to give you 10 points. Right, that's right. Very yeah, good, Karen.
Abetting is to be present, perhaps. When
to aid is to help in the action, is to actually help in the action. To abet is to approve or encourage it.
Can it be positive? You can right. abet somebody.
Can you abet something good?
I would imagine you could, yes. Hmm. I would imagine you could. Tony, what's the difference between an emergency and a disaster?
Your HMO.
Boy, that was a lot bigger hand than I thought it would be.
Well, in an emergency and a disaster, disaster is a falling apart of many things. It comes from being against the stars.
Yes.
You are totally unfavored. It's almost divine. It's a huge thing, whereas an emergency can simply be something that arises out of a bad situation.
But that's not really the difference.
An emergency has already happened, whereas a disaster, emergency you can help, where disaster has happened, has occurred.
Yeah. You know what, that's exactly right. Very good, Sam. An emergency you can prepare for. You can prepare for an emergency, and most often you have.
Like this show.
Right. No, dear, this show is a disaster. One prepares for an emergency, one cleans up after a disaster. Murray, what's the difference between hail and hearty?
Well, I've never known it to be heartying outside. But,
that's true. You ever see a hearty storm?
Right, right, right. Hail means healthy, hearty means strong.
Sort of.
Is hail an expression on your face, and hearty is something that you do physically? Because I'm giving you the hail and hearty handshake and a hail, you know.
Wait a minute. I want to pursue this line of reasoning, said that I was very close. What? Let's talk about that for a second. What would I need to be closer?
A dictionary.
Hail is healthy, and hearty is the expression of that health.
Well, you know.
Yes, she's right. Yeah!
That's the worst 10 points I've ever given anybody
that's
in my whole life.
Yeah, that's all right. It'll pass by quickly.
Hearty means exuberant or unreservedly cordial. In health terms, it means robust, full of vigor and enthusiasm. Hale, and I did not know this, means simply free from disease. Free from disease, defect, or infirmity. I did not know that till yesterday when I looked it up. Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between pale and wan?
You could be pale.
Yes.
And still healthy. Wan implies more drawn and weakling and sickly looking.
You know, that's absolutely right. Can you do a little bit more with pale? Because you're exactly right. You can be healthy and pale, but if you're wan, it suggests poor health. That's exactly right.
So ding that bell.
Well.
Wow, he's easy today.
Just doing what I'm told. Wan is dim and lusterless, suggesting poor health, but conceivably it could even be dark or shaded in color. Pale means deficient in color, white, ashen, and pallid.
Try this one, Lenore. What's the difference between desperation and despair?
Despair is a loss of hope.
It is.
Desperation is...
not knowing where to turn. At the end of one's tether.
You still have some hope, but it's receding rapidly.
Yeah, you're pretty much there.
When you're desperate, you're looking for an answer to something. You're desperate for a solution to something. Mm. Yep. When
you can be in desperation financially, not have any money, but not be in despair, not be without hope.
Despair is as low as you can go, I think. It's
what do you think, 10
ones,
points?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, considering what I've been giving out today, 10 points, that's 10. Very good. Yes, desperation, the element we didn't have is desperation implies recklessness. Seizing upon any action that offers help, regardless of consequences. Mm-hmm. You're just
so,
desperate.
Honey, I bought that fur coat because I was feeling desperate.
And I looked at the bill and was in total despair. Despair means utter loss of hope, complete abandonment of expectation, and generally implies a state of paralyzed futility. And finally, Sam, where's Jada?
Yeah.
Sit here, Jada. What's the difference between a schlemiel and a schlemazel?
Pick me. There's the classic.
Well, one was Laverne,
right?
And one was Shirley.
It's like the schlemiel spills the soup, and the one it falls on is the schlemazel.
Do you know something? Exactly right.
That's the definition. That's the definition.
He is exactly right. I couldn't have. According to Jada, a schlemiel is a waiter who drops a tray of hot coffee onto a patron's lap. The schlemazel is that patron. A schlemiel is a bumbling, oafish fool, and a schlemazel is an otherwise capable individual in the wrong place at the wrong time.
A schlemiel gets paid for nothing, and the schlemazel is the one who pays for it.
Exactly. Thank you very much for that one.
That's our Spotlight Round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's go on to round five. Let's close with a round of second opinions. Please tell me the famous fictional doctor who offered the following words for your consideration.
Oh.
Carolyn, famous doctor that said, "Get me the telescope, Chi-Chi. Our journey is nearly ended. Very soon, we should be able to see the shores of Africa."
Dr. Frankenstein.
No.
Dr. Livingston, I presume.
He wasn't fictional.
Oh. Shoot.
I tell you.
Could you read that again, Richard?
Who's the
Get me the telescope, Chi-Chi. Our journey is nearly ended.
Dr. Tarzan.
Very soon, we should be able to see the shores of Africa.
Okay, go for it.
Dr. Doolittle.
10 points.
Yes.
Dr. Doolittle. I think the bell has had it. Oh, yes, there it is now.
The bell starts coughing. We've all had it.
That's right. There you go.
I'm personally adopting the phrase, "Get me the telescope, Chi-Chi." You know, we really can
as
come
well
in handy.
Well, you might, yeah.
Get me the telescope.
Much fun as we're having.
No,
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, come on.
All right. Tony, try this one. Famous doctor that said, "I compounded the elements... watch them boil and smoke together in the glass."
Faustus.
And when
Faustus.
The ebullition had subsided, with a strong glow of courage, drank off the portion.
Well, Dr. Jekyll.
Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah.
Is exactly right. It was drank off the potion, actually, but that's it. All right, try this one, Arnie.
These are all fictional, right?
Fictional doctors. Right. "'Tis vain, this empty brooding here. Thou guest the holy symbols be. Ye spirits come, ye hover near. Oh, if you hear, answer me."
This is Faustus.
It is Faustus. It's Dr. Faustus. Very good. All right. You want to get like that? Let's try this one, Francine. Famous doctor that said, "Hey, Jim boy, y'all ever had a really cold Georgia-style mint julep?"
Uh,
That's a doctor?
I think I just heard it.
Is that a doctor or is that a doc?
That's a doctor. Hey, Jim boy. Y'all ever had a real cold Georgia-style mint julep?
Doc Holliday?
No, good guess, Doc Holliday. No, but he's not fictional.
He's not fictional either.
Well, I guess. The comic book version.
This one's definitely fictional. I was hoping the Jim boy might help you out a little bit here. Jim
boy. Georgia. Georgia?
Yeah.
Jim boy.
No, I don't think they're going to know. Don't say it out loud. Does the audience know?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of them know out there. See that? Oh, they look blank over there. There's not a doctor in the crowd. Any? What do you think on the other side?
Well, I thought it was the doctor in Huckleberry Finn, but I don't think
it is. It is not. Is there a doctor in the house? Dr. McCoy from Star Trek.
Star Trek.
I know, Star Trek.
Jim boy.
Hey, Jim boy, you ever had a real...
Dr.
There
McCoy.
You go.
Okay. Dr. McCoy.
All right. Try this one, Paula. Try this one. Who said, of course, the whole point of the Doomsday Machine is lost if you keep it a secret. Why didn't you tell the world?
Dr. Strangelove.
10 points. Dr. Strangelove is right. Wow, that's a big day over there. And this is just for the honor and the glory of it. See if you can guess this one. This is a really tough one, but I wanted to see if you would get it, Barry. Yes, these creatures you have seen are animals, craven and wrought into new shapes. To that, to the study of plasticity of living forms, my life
Dr. Moreau.
Dr.
The island
Moreau
of Dr. Moreau.
Is exactly right. That was a real strong ending, but I'm sorry to say for you guys, it was a perfect day for Arnie Reisman's team. 106 points and winners this week. Congratulations. Nice job. Yeah. 3-point day. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Lenore Naxon, Geese Graphics, and all the folks here at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Also to Joanne Wallace, Robin Smith, and everybody at KQED-FM for their long friendship. Sharon Salkind are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the associate producer and webmaster. So long from San Francisco, where by law, if you want to own an elephant, you can. But you got to keep it on a leash. Thanks for the hospitality, San Francisco. See you next week.
Support for CJU in San Francisco comes from the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco, our home away from home on the Bay and on the web at IntercontinentalSanFrancisco.com. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says you. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Support for WPLN comes from Wild Birds Unlimited, providing bird feeders, houses, and backyard decorations for gift giving, serving Nashville for 25 years with locations in Nashville, Franklin, and Goodlettsville. Details are online at WBU.com. Founded in 1842, Cumberland University has a long history in Middle Tennessee. Today, Cumberland is striving to create community leaders by offering a Master of Science in Public Service Management program. This program prepares future leaders for public service careers at the federal, state, and local level, as well as social service and nonprofit agencies. Classes meet on a schedule designed for working adults. Details at cumberland.edu/MSP.
Thank you.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.